Hello, Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York, and WOOS 98.9 FM, Schenectady, broadcasting live from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Andrea. Tonight, current events in climate and human rights.
Wow, listen to Andrea's voice.
I'm good.
Yes, all right. Then, this week's episode of the Triple E's Education, Empowerment, Entrepreneurship.
And later on, get a preview of the Nature Lab workshop happening this Friday on genetic modification.
After that, correspondent Erica talks to John McKnight on tools for school kids.
Finally, more coverage of the United Nations anniversary at SUNY Albany. But first, headlines.
Here we go, rapid fire headlines. The Times Union reports the state is behind on its preparation for the census count. New York released a report nearly 9 months after it was due, and most census activists say if lack concrete steps on how to use $20 million allocated in the state budget. State libraries are also waiting for information since they will be used by many residents who lack access to the internet.
And for the fourth consecutive year, the state's comptroller's office has improved the rating of the city of Troy on fiscal basis or stress. Fiscal stress is defined as a total inability to generate enough revenue within the current fiscal period to meet the expenditures.
The Times Union reports that the 9 U.S. citizens slaughtered, how tragic, in the ambush Monday were from a Mormon community in northern Mexico where NXIVM recruited teenagers for girls' school to live in the capital region under the care of high-ranking slave for Keith Rainier, formerly of Half Moon, was convicted of all charges of sex trafficking, forced labor, and racketeering in his trial.
And for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Mohawk Magazine, Hudson Mohawk Magazine, on the WOOC 105.3 FM Troy and WOOS 98.9 FM Schenectady.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or just warm regards, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org or follow us on Instagram, Twitter at the Media Sanctuary, and on Facebook at facebook.com/mediasanctuary. Okay, for our first segment, on November 4th, climate law professor Eleanor Sline spoke to Bennington College on climate and human rights, also discusses Trump's notification of withdrawal from Paris Climate Agreement with Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
We're talking with Eleanor Stein, who teaches climate law at both Albany Law School and SUNY Albany. And she recently gave a talk at Bennington College about the issue of climate change and human rights. But I thought I'd start off with a question. One of the things you mentioned tonight, Eleanor, was the importance of the November 4th, 2019 date. Why is that important?
Well, that's today. And it's important because this is the first day under the Paris Agreement on Climate Change that a nation that was a party to that agreement can file its intention to withdraw from the agreement officially. And today the Trump administration, in fact, did just that. After stating on June 1st, 2017, that he was planning to do that, an announcement which triggered the formation of a group called the U.S. Climate Alliance, consisting of now 25 states that have agreed that they, or we, will maintain our obligations under Paris, Trump announced that the U.S. was going to leave. And under Article 23 of the Paris Agreement, that means that 1 year from today, the withdrawal of the United States from the Paris Agreement will become effective. And 1 year from today will be the day after the next presidential election.
So one of the things you also talked about was the issue that international, refugee law is not particularly great on protecting immigrants. How does the issue of immigration and the forced migration and, literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of climate refugees, how is the legal system going to try to respond to that, if all?
Well, right now, both international law and U.S. law has no provision for the protection of people who are fleeing their country because of environmental conditions or because of the climate crisis. And therefore, they have no special protections. So whereas people who migrate are forced to migrate from their own country because of political persecution or even because of certain kinds of political conflict may be eligible to be granted refugee status and therefore eligible for asylum. That is not true of people who are fleeing the climate crisis, even though their countries may have been basically rendered pretty much uninhabitable by the climate crisis itself.
Now, you said you didn't particularly like this quote, but you made the point that the previous century was a key constitutional law issue with respect to issues of race and gender, and there's a need for this century to focus on climate rights as a constitutional issue.
And your question is, why don't I particularly like it? Well, I use it, and I think it has an essential truth to it, and it's a reminder of really the decades of fights in the Supreme Court in the 20th century that got us to a certain place with regard to women's rights and the rights of people of color. My concern is that, W.E.B. Du Bois said the 20th century will be the century of the color line. And you could say that the 21st century is the century of the climate crisis. And I just think, unfortunately, we haven't overcome the issues related to race, and we haven't overcome the issues related to gender. Unfortunately, those are still with us. And on top of that, we have the issue of climate change.
And you also made reference to the fact that, about two-thirds of the world's constitutions and legal systems have really, spoken to the issue of, a right to the healthy environment, the clean environment. But that the United States, which 30, 40 years ago was considered cutting edge worldwide on environmental issues, is really much weaker than these other countries in terms of trying to deal with the issue of human rights and the environment and climate. Why has the United States become so bad on this?
Well, in my view, there's a couple of major drawbacks to the U.S. Constitution. One, of course, has to do with its birth as a really an instrument for the preservation of slavery, largely, in the form of a document about liberty. But the others, the United States Constitution also doesn't grant any economic rights. So there's no right to make a living. There's no right to a living wage. There's no right to, have food on your plate or to feed your family. Many constitutions have those rights. And of course, there's no environmental rights in the U.S. Constitution at all. Now, I will say, fortunately, that many state constitutions have taken on these rights and have them. Many of the state constitutions in this country have economic rights and have environmental rights. So we are relying on those largely.
So even though you, decried the lack of constitutional protection for human rights related to climate in the United States, you still seem to have a fair level of optimism that this, in fact, may be an important strategy. You talked about, New Zealand has recognized One River as actually having the rights of personhood, and the Netherlands have had some important court decisions or court rulings, and then here in the United States, the Children's Trust. So, what is your, prognosis or maybe assessment of the legal challenges here in the United States with human rights and climate?
Well, you know, the first case that tried to link these two issues was the case brought by the Inuit of Alaska and Canada against the United States for the fossil fuel economy that has basically destroyed their towns and their countries and their livelihoods. And that case, they lost that case. And the next case that tried to raise these issues was the case brought in the Netherlands. And when that case was decided favorably, in fact, the court required the government of the Netherlands to be more ambitious in its climate aspirations. I felt that this was really a sign of things to come. And I wrote a law review on it to prove my point, because a lot of people felt that it was really just an aberration and that we would never succeed on this human rights cases on climate change. But now there have been a number of them around the world, and people are using this as a tool, for one thing, for education of their own people about the depth of the climate crisis and why overall it's a violation of human rights in the largest sense. And I think people will continue to use it, and I think we'll lose plenty of them. But the fact that we've now begun to win some of them is a huge, huge step forward.
So what, if anything, can, you know, an average person do at this point in terms of promoting the concept that climate change is violating human rights?
Well, I think that the most important thing for all of us to do right now is to put pressure on our governments and pressure on our legislators, pressure on the federal government to really transform our approach to climate change, to be responsible members of the world community. And any form in which you can do that is good. Being, you know, on the back of your legislators, your local legislators, Congress, and maybe most importantly is being in the streets and being counted, standing up and being counted. So go to the climate marches, bring your friends, bring your children. First of all, it'll make you feel a lot better by doing something physical out in the streets to do something about climate. And secondly, we know from history that that is what makes changes in government, is just the overwhelming force of a mobilized public opinion.
Now, if people want to read some of your legal research, your blogs, or even just get more background information about climate change and human rights, what are some ways they could do that?
Good question. You can Google me, and a lot of my articles and talks that I've given are available online. I don't have a Facebook page, and I don't have a website.
Okay. And this has been Eleanor Stein, climate professor at both SUNY Albany and Albany Law School. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
And we thank you, Mark, for that amazing discussion. Thanks so much.
Okay. In segment two, H. Bosch Jr., yours truly, sat down with Nakisha Hiltz of Gabriel's Touch Talent Development Service. It's a company designed to organize, advance, and produce the careers of talented individuals by offering guidance, trainings, and classes to help condition and prepare their talent for representation. Take it away. Hello again, everyone. This is H. Bosch Jr. with another segment of the Triple E's Education, Empowerment, Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Miss Nakisha Hiltz of Gabriel's Touch Talent Development. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we are so honored and blessed to finally catch up with what I considered one of the fastest up-and-coming entrepreneurs in the Capital District.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, what got you started?
Well, what got me started, I started actually doing a little bit of modeling when I was in my teens. It wasn't really for me, so I was like, I'll set it to the side. It wasn't until I had my son, who's now six. When he turned two, he seemed like he was just like really into the whole modeling and taking pictures. So we reached out to a lady named Athena, and mm-hmm. sat with her, and she basically helped individuals such as myself get started with just an idea of how to get out there. Mm-hmm. So from there, we worked with her, and I would say in like 2 months, my son had his first fashion show, and photo shoot.
Wow-wee. So what does it take to be in this kind of business?
It takes a lot, honestly.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like any business. You know, it takes, right. First of all, that unwilling desire, that hungry, that fire in your belly to say, no matter what, I'm going to succeed. But I'll let you finish answering about your business. Right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I go by the this phrase called PITS. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's, it stands for passion, patience, investing, time, and tough skin.
Ooh,
I feel like
wow,
those
I like
are the
that.
Things that is needed mm-hmm. in this type of industry. You have to have the passion for it. If you don't have the heart for it, then it's really not for you. It's not going to work.
Okay.
You have to have patience. Mm-hmm. Nothing is ever going to happen overnight.
Right.
Especially in this industry, you can be working it for years before you actually get that finally, like that break.
That breakthrough.
Right. Investing. Mm-hmm. Anything you do, regardless of if it's in this industry or if it's in, you know, something else that you want to do, you have to invest in yourself. You're going to have that.
And believe in yourself.
And yes. believe in yourself, mm-hmm. absolutely. Time. Time is key.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say time wasted is money wasted. If you don't have the time to
preach
do it,
and teach now.
I wouldn't recommend
yes,
it at
preach
all.
Preach and teach.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly is tough skin. This mm-hmm. industry is cutthroat. So you're not going to always get the pat on the back. You're not going to always get the roles and things that you want in this industry mm-hmm. just because there's somebody out there who's doing it a little bit better, mm-hmm. investing a little bit more in their time, mm-hmm. excuse me, and so on and so forth. So those are the things that I would say you need to be in this industry.
Uh-huh. Well, let me say this, Ms. Hiltz. A pat on the back comes in by you sitting next to me, all right, on my show. That means you're recognized, all right? You've made some moves out there that people recognize you because you're here.
And I respect
and
that.
And I reached
Thank
out
you.
To you.
Yes.
All right? So you are doing some things that are correct, and you are doing some things that are right. And as I say, you're making a difference by being a difference, okay?
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank
so,
you.
So what type of service do you provide?
So with my services, what I provide is different services for different talents. So as of right now, I have a lot of individuals who are coming to me for acting and modeling. Mm-hmm. So with that, I have acting classes where I work with different acting coaches, excuse me.
Okay. You know, I'm a frustrated actor.
Are you?
I got plenty of roles. Yeah.
Oh.
All right, go ahead. Anyway.
I'm also working with some comedians out there. A business partner and I are actually building different events to bring out more of the talent in the upstate industry.
Okay.
And our goal is to get the fresh talent, give them a chance, basically, to get out there and show what they have.
Mm-hmm.
So just creating different outlets for different individuals, classes, guidance. I work with different people. I sit with them, giving them, you know, the rundown of what to expect, how to expect it, mm-hmm. when, how to go about it.
So let me ask you then, who's cut out for this type of business and cut out for this?
I would honestly say anybody who has the heart for it.
Okay.
Anybody who wants to put in that time and effort, who can invest in themselves and really see the bigger picture mm-hmm. at the end of the tunnel, I'd say they're cut out for it.
So if interested, and if I called or if I'm interested, how do I get a consultation? You know, how do I get a sit down with this amazing woman, you know, entrepreneur and I mean, just talented and, you know, like I said, you are just a natural, the Kool-Aid smile, the energy. I mean, you are really, really special.
Thank you.
How do I get a consultation?
So basically, you can find me on Facebook, Gabriel's Touch Talent
okay.
Development Service.
So let's give us all of that. Give us
okay.
all your contact stuff, okay?
Uh-huh. So yes, you go on to Facebook, find me at Gabriel's Touch Talent Development Services. There is a area where you can just make an appointment. The consultations are always free.
Okay.
I sit with individuals for about an hour, just getting a rundown of who they are, what they're looking for, what I can do to help them succeed in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And if it seems like it's a fit for the both of us, we move forward from there.
Okay. I also want to say, when you go to this young lady's Facebook page, she is a ferocious exerciser and fitness fanatic.
Thank you.
Wait till you see her Facebook page. And I mean, when she shows you a picture of those arms, I mean, they are loaded, locked and loaded. And congratulations. That means you really take care of yourself.
Thank you.
And you take pride in your appearance and your well-being and your physical health. And I'm sure physical health ties into mental health.
Because
you have the whole package. And I want to commend you for that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Am I too old to start? Because I told you I'm a frustrated actor. I'm ready.
Not at all. I've actually worked with 15-day-olds up into 65-year-olds. So there's no age limit to this business.
So what is a talent developer? Is it an agent or manager? Me and educate my listeners.
Gotcha. It's neither, actually.
Okay.
So talent developer is kind of a name I gave myself. I came up with myself because I wanted to stay away from the manager and agent aspect of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just someone who basically helps to build an individual's talent.
Right.
So you come
empowering
to me.
Empowering them, basically. Right.
Yes. And
to
then,
make productive and significant changes in their
absolutely.
Life. To overcome their adversity.
Right.
Just gave you a little of my spell.
I love it. Yes.
Overcoming adversity specialist.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And as I help them build their talent and, just kind of shape them into what it is the industry is looking for, I also work on platforms where I'm sending out their information to casting directors, talent directors, agents, managers, to get them booked in jobs and actually eventually get into a good agency to where they're more represented.
Okay. So what big plans do we have in the future for Gabriel's Touch Talent Development?
So I'm excited. We're actually putting together a magazine,
mm-hmm.
which will showcase a lot of the talent in upstate New York.
Okay.
The goal is
And who are you working with on that project?
As of right now, it's still just my project. It's just the first time I'm actually speaking of it.
Right.
However, I am working with
First.
Yes.
Hot off the press, you heard it here first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I am working with a lot of great individuals right now. Kaheem Priest. I'm working with Prince Sprav.
Yeah, I heard him. Good brother.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
We've collaborated on some things.
Nice.
I saw on Facebook, he's just got an award.
Yes. Congratulations. Yes.
Congratulations.
To him.
Shout out to the Prince, man.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's so many other individuals that's coming to me that just wants to collaborate, mm-hmm. build. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically where I'm at with that. So hopefully, in the future, you'll see Gabriel's Touch magazine out there with a whole bunch of different talents.
Well, this is where I want to see you at. And I think I mentioned to you, and I am the host this year again, the second annual CNYS Black Expo. Black Expo, all right? I want to see you. I want to have you down there. I want you to be a vendor. I want you to be down there talking, networking. I'm going to give you a shout out. I'm going to give you some mic time because that's going to be the place to be November 9th at the Capitol Center. They expect over 1,500 vendors and 5,000 people. And at night, they're having a black tie gala, and somebody's supposed to be getting an award.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Right? Okay.
Yes. Okay.
No, absolutely.
And you are on the radar because today you had the opportunity to come on the show with the hippest, hottest host in America.
Absolutely.
Right here.
Yes.
H. Bosch Jr. So I'll end by saying, Ms. Hiltz, I appreciate everything you've done.
Thank you.
I appreciate everything you're doing.
Thank you.
And I appreciate everything you will continue to do. God bless you. Continued success. You are a true, true treasure.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You are so welcome. All right. Until next time, folks. All right. Don't hear about making a difference. You need to be about making a difference. This is Inez Bosch's baby boy, H. Bosch Jr., doing what I'm made to believe. Okay. Thank you so much, Miss Nakisha Hiltz of Gabriel's Touch Talent Development Service. We appreciate you stopping by and taking time out your busy schedule to bless us with an interview. Okay, moving on to our next segment. Or actually, I should say, for those of you just tuning in, I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Andrea. You are listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine at the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or just a sour bone to pick, email us at thesanctuaryforindependentmedia.org or Also, be sure to tune in every weeknight from 7 to 10 weeknights for the Jazz Extraordinaire at the Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region. Now we move on to segment 3. In segment 3, the Nature Lab intern Hazel Leram speaks to the scientist Heidi Henney about the workshop she is co-hosting on this Friday, November 8th, with artist Botswana Rosa.
My name is Hazel Leram, and today I'm speaking with Heidi Henley, a scientist who will be hosting the Nature Lab workshop Chimeras, Let's Talk About Genetic Engineering, this Friday, November 8th at 5, which is free and open to the public. So welcome, Heidi. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
So to begin, could you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing at your workshop on Friday? And what exactly is a chimera?
So chimera has a lot of different meanings. And Boreana's meaning, which is probably the mythological one, is the combination of two different animals. Or in some cases, maybe even like a plant and the animal.
And Boreana is your collaborator, right?
Right. Mariana is my collaborator at the Transmedia Department here at Syracuse University. But a chimera for me tends to be when you have a protein that you genetically modify to be attached to another protein that it shouldn't really in nature be attached to. And so in that case, we call it a chimeric protein. And we can use it for a lot of tools in biology that I'll be talking about in my seminar.
Okay.
On Friday.
Fascinating. So my understanding of this workshop is that it's a bioart workshop. So what exactly is bioart to you?
So bioart to me is a collaboration between scientists and artists. And I think for biologists like myself, bioart creates a creative means for us to interact with the community at large. It's a playful way to discuss science and the tools we use and the materials that we work with to create something that's visual and that we can make conclusions from. And so it's really exciting for me to work with people like Boreana, who can utilize some of those materials to create art.
Right. So what are the desired outcomes of art and science working together?
Well, I think art and science together are, in my opinion, pretty similar. They both use a creative means to come up with a question that we hope to find an answer to. And so the way that scientists do it is we come up with a question or a testable hypothesis where we can use targeted approaches to answer that hypothesis. And doing that is a really creative process. And I think it's pretty similar to what bioartists go through too.
So as a scientist, how do you think that you benefit from working with artists and vice versa for artists?
Well, I think, you know, in some ways when I watch bioartists present, it is extremely playful and fun, and where they use techniques in science or questions raised by science to create either political statement or a fun statement for the community. Where, you know, when you're doing science every day in a lab, you get bogged down into the details. So coming out into an environment with artists who are looking more at what maybe some of those details mean in a bigger picture is pretty exciting for me as a scientist.
Mm-hmm. So specifically for this Chimera workshop, what are you hoping that the public will gain from the exercise?
I think, one, they'll learn hopefully a little bit about the power of genetics and model systems and what we can do with chimeras in a scientific sense, so either through transgenic models or making chimeric proteins, such as when you attach a protein to a fluorescent molecule and you can watch it move around in either a whole organism or a cell, and what that can mean for either disease implications or in understanding basic cell and developmental biology. And then I think it can be more playful to a broader audience, discussing what that can mean in the context of mythology and making chimeric animals.
Okay, so we're talking to Heidi Henley, who is hosting a Chimera's Let's Talk About Genetic Engineering Lab this Friday. And I understand that as a scientist, you work in a lab. Could you tell us about what you do?
So I look at early embryonic development, and I understand how post-fertilization, how one cell duplicates to become two and keeps proliferating to create complex tissues that create a whole animal. And so we use a zebrafish model to do this, and we follow how cells divide and then their fate in after that division process.
That sounds super interesting.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So kind of a doomsday question, but do you think that the public should be worried about the future of genetic biotechnology, or should they be hopeful?
I think it's probably a combination of both. There's ethical questions you always consider with any sort of genetic manipulation that in an open discussion should always occur on that. But it's also extremely hopeful, right? A lot of genetic cures are in the future for certain devastating diseases, such as Huntington's or CFTR. There's stuff in clinical trial. And, you know, I think in both cases, it's scary, but also really exciting at the same time.
I agree. So as someone who works in the biosciences and with arts, do your colleagues ever struggle to understand your engagement with the arts? And do people generally kind of get it?
That's a really great question. Sometimes people are... Some other scientists are very into it. They think it's really fun and playful, and they love coming and engaging with artists and scientists. I feel like graduate students and undergraduates get it more. And I think at a faculty level, people are starting to enjoy it more and becoming more engaged in the sciences. But it's a slow process,
right?
For sure.
That's good to hear that it's happening.
Yeah.
And so here at Nature Lab, we care a lot about science literacy and getting the public engaged. What can the public do to get engaged with biosciences other than showing up to Nature Lab workshops?
I think that's a great question. And I think the bio arts is a way to help engage the public. And I honestly, I think in some ways, it's on the scientists' it's on the scientists and their responsibility to try to engage the public more. I don't think as a whole we have done a great job in doing that. And so I think this is at least on my end to try to reach out to the public, and hopefully they'll come.
Yeah, I hope so too. So as a wrap up, how should people prepare themselves for coming to this workshop on Friday?
Turn up their curiosity and get ready for some great discussion. Bring their non-living creatures and get ready for some assembly and talking about how those creatures will develop.
All right. That was scientist Heidi Henley, and she'll be hosting a workshop on chimeras and genetic engineering this Friday, November 8th from 5 to 7. We hope to see you there, and thanks for talking to us, Heidi.
Thank you.
And that was our intern, Hazel Laram. And don't forget about the workshop, which is, she's co-hosting this Friday at November 8th right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media.
Okay, moving to segment four. In this segment, Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Erica Diggs speaks with John McKnight about the Clarity he created aboard for the Children Within the Philippines. The charity was created back in 2010 with a group of previous colleagues. He goes on to express his reasoning behind dedicating his free time to help those who are in need.
This is Erica Diggs with the Media Sanctuary, and I'm sitting here with John McKnight for an interview for Tools for School Kids. How are you doing, Mr. McKnight?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Good. AKA DJ Smooth?
That's right.
All right. What exactly is Tools for School Kids?
Tools for School Kids is a program that myself and a couple of colleagues and I started back in 2010 through our nonprofit charity organization, which is called Community Empowerment Programs Incorporated.
Where does your charity take place?
Takes place primarily in the Philippines. I started traveling there back in 2010, 3 times a year.
And what do you do in this charity?
We do a couple of things. My focus has been education, and so I travel back and forth to the Philippines to work with the school systems and the children, teaching, providing livelihood, nutrition, and educational services.
So tell the people what their donations will contribute to.
Donations will contribute to things like school supplies, to break that down to be more specific. Books, pens, pencils, reading materials. We even pay for the tutors who come in and do English as a second language. And I do some of that myself. Uniforms and transportation. Uniforms and transportation are very important because kids come from the different provinces, the different barangays within the province, and they have to take public transportation back and forth to school.
And why do you do this charity?
I do it because it's in my heart to work with and to help the underprivileged people, children, and families. And I do it because I just like to give back in whatever way I can.
And how has your program improved over the years?
Well, we improved by adding on several of the different Philippine educational school systems. They're public schools. We have a couple of private schools that we also work with. And I think the biggest thing that we improved in was to get the support of the school systems, because that's very difficult in the beginning to go into a country where no one knows you and you have to kind of convince them that you're here to help and to do the right thing. And to gain that trust is the most important thing. So areas like that where big improvements were made, I call them improvements, but they were actually accomplishments and achievements. Whereas like school principals, barangay captains, and teachers will want to embrace and have embraced the program and really have taken advantage of the services that we provide.
And what is some of your goals for the next 3 to 5 years?
3 to 5 years, my biggest goal is to relocate permanently to the Philippines. Eventually, I will leave, and that's mainly because it will be more self-sufficient to run the program while living in the Philippines. So that's goal number one. Goal number two is always to increase the number of participants that we serve. So we served about 4,000, between 4,000 and 5,000 within the past 10 years. For me, those are good numbers, but they could be better. And also to bring on more staff and more volunteers. Volunteers are critical in this mission.
And what do you feel you should improve upon?
Me personally? I don't know if I have the answer to that question right now. Maybe I could do better in marketing. It's difficult to ask people for help. Anyone who does charity work or fundraising will tell you that the most difficult thing that they have to do is to go out and to solicit funds. And it really is, because people want to give, but people want to give because it's a commonality, or, you know, there's a good reason why they're going to give their money, and they want to see that their money is going to be put to good use. And so we take lots of pictures. Right now, not too savvy in the video production piece, but, you know, if we have some volunteers who could help with that, that would be great. And so, but we like to be transparent. I personally like to for people to know that when you give whatever amount you have given, you can definitely know that, and those people who do know me and know that I travel 3 times a year to the Philippines know that, you know, the money that they give is going to a good cause.
Okay, so tell us a little more about DJ Smooth, your alter ego.
Well, that guy, he's been a DJ for 40 years. He's born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts. And somewhere around 12 years old, he had a passion for music. Just jumped into his mind that he wanted to be like those people on the radio station. So that's when it all began for me. Got my first set of turntables and a mixer at 12 for Christmas. And I've been plugging along ever since. It has been a very fruitful and lucrative career for me as a DJ. I've played on various radio stations in the Capital District. That was another dream of mine I wanted to pursue. I wanted to be an air personality, so I went to the new School of Radio and Television and got my degree certificate from there and went on to college radio first, 88.3 WVCR. And then from there, I spent about seven or eight years. And then from there, I went to Jams 96.3 in the area. Spent a couple of years there. And from there, I went to 102.3 Kiss FM and spent a couple of years there. All at the same time as I'm doing radio, I was doing remote DJ services, basically going out and doing clubs and parties. And so people who live in the Capital District know that some of the hottest clubs were popping in the 90s. And so, I mean, need I say more? Been there, done that. And so now I'm doing this. I still do remote DJ services, but I'm dabbling back in radio. And, you know, I found a new passion that I really enjoy. And so I'm doing internet radio. And that leads me up to, you know, the 247urbanhits.com. So I'm doing that these days.
Okay. Can you tell the people where they can find more information about your organization and some of your social medias?
The organization right now, we have to revamp our website because some of our board members have left and resigned, and so things are changing in that area. So right now you can find us I'm really doing word of mouth right now. I do have a Facebook page. On my regular Facebook page, you'll find my page, a CEPI, C-E-P-I page. So you can find some information about the charity organization there. So if you just punch in CEPI, N-Y-S, all types of information will come up about the charity organization. That's how you can find us there. That's the Facebook, the Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So once again, it's CEPI, C-E-P-I-N-Y-S, and that's how you can plug into that. To plug into 24/7 Urban Hits, real simple, just plug into 247 Urban Hits, and you search that in Google, and that can get you to the online radio station. Also, http://, you know, you got to put those in front, or sometimes you don't have to, but you got to put those in front. And then 247urbanhits.com, that'll bring up the radio station. Then there's also dj-smooth.com. And there's dj.smooth.live. My social medias for DJ Smooth are DJ Smooth NY or DJ Smooth 66, and that will get you directly to my social medias all over the net. So I'm well plugged in, well versed, And then there's my regular name on Facebook, which is John McKnight. So it's, yeah, that's pretty much it. Facebook.com/DJSmooth66. And that plugs you into my main page for Facebook.
Lastly, where can people find your donation page?
The donation page is located on GoFundMe. So GoFundMe.com/ToolsForSchoolKids. So with the Tools for School Kids part, you have to put school-tools-4-school-kids. So Tools for School Kids.
This has been Erica with WOC 105.3. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, John.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
And good thank you to Erica for bringing that discussion regarding helping those who are in need, children especially, in the Philippines.
Okay, in segment 5, lead Dana Wright of People of Albany United for Sail Energy spoke about the imminent threat to climate crisis at the 74th anniversary United Nations Day celebration, a United Nations Association event on October 26th at SUNY Albany.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for inviting PAWS to be part of the 74th anniversary of the United Nations. It is an honor to be here. I am Diana Wright, the facilitator of People of Albany United for Safe Energy. In the spirit of the United Nations declaration that the climate crisis is a defining issue of our time, and in keeping with the theme of the day, Our Planet, Our Future, I'd like to share with you some of our history, our current projects, and our hopes for the future. A year ago, in October 2018, the United Nations panel on intergovernmental climate change came out with a report that made news on the mainstream media. The most alarming statement was that we could pass the tipping point of irreversible climate change by 2030. The IPCC is a very conservative organization, and many climate scientists think we could well pass the tipping point before 2030. What then is the tipping point? Imagine cutting down a tree. Initially, you chop and chop, but nothing seems to change. Then suddenly, one stroke of the hatchet frees the trunk from its base, and that tipping point, there is no way to keep the tree standing. It's an apt metaphor for one of the most alarming aspects of climate change, the existence of tipping elements, like the coral reefs and the melting glaciers. These elements are components of the climate that may pass critical threshold, or tipping point, after which a tiny change can completely alter the state of the system. Let me go over just some of the nicks in the tree we are chopping down. Most recently, there have been small sections of the Arctic Sea around Siberia boiling because the permafrost on the ocean floor is starting to melt. This, in turn, releases methane, which is 86 times more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2 over a 20-year period. Remember that we don't have 20 years, we have less than 10. When we pass the final tipping point, then our progeny will face thousands of years of killing heat, super hurricanes, withering drought, and drowning rain. Not to mention the mass extinction that is already underway of all of our innocent creatures on this planet, which help keep it in balance. And yet the governments that represent us from local up to national proceed on a business as usual basis. When you have a fire in your house, you don't take the time to sit down for 3 years to make plans. I use the 3-year time frame because that's exactly what the New York Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act allows for. 3 years for various communities to come up with an option that in turn will take an additional year to decide which action to take. If the CLPCA keeps to its time frame and doesn't take longer, then we've used up 4 out of the 10 years we might have with nothing to show for it. Unless we take significant and what may be considered drastic action, we will pass the tipping point. So who is PAWS and what are we doing about this? PAWS is a grassroots group of individuals who have come together to promote safe, sustainable energy and fight for environmental justice. We engage the greater public to stop the fossil fuel industry's assault on the people of Albany and our environment, and we are the local affiliate of 350.org. PAWS held its first meeting on January 10, 2014. We had just successfully organized an anti-fracking rally at the Governor's State of the State on the 8th. More than 2,000 people turned out at the event, which culminated in December 2014 with Governor Andrew M. Cuomo's administration announcing that it would ban hydraulic fracturing in New York State because of concerns over health risks ending years of debate over extracting natural gas from the Marcellus Shale. At early pause meetings, our main objective was to stop the Department of Environmental Conservation from granting an air permit to Global Partners to expand their oil operation at the Port of Albany. They had issued a permit for the Bakken shipments of crude without an environmental impact statement or an environmental justice analysis, and we wanted to make sure this did not happen again for the proposed shipments of tar sands. To date, no heating facilities have been built. The first thing PAWS did was to form relationships with Common Council members and professional environmental groups who were already working on the issue. Through canvassing, we became acquainted with the residents of Ezra Prentice and the Mount Hope neighborhoods, which are environmental justice communities. We have worked with A Village and Ezra Prentice community leaders to support their efforts to stop the diesel trucks from commuting through their community. More than 100 trucks per hour drive past their homes to get to the port, causing the highest incidence of childhood asthma, respiratory illnesses, and cancer in the city of Albany. Just last Monday, the DEC announced the results of a 2-year air quality testing project, giving the residents the documentation they need to reroute the trucks away from their homes. This is still a long fight ahead, but we now have the ammunition we need to fight back. At the same time, we realized that Albany was becoming a national hub of shipments of fracked Bakken crude oil that had exploded 4 times in North America between July 2013 and January 2014. The first was in Quebec when a mile-long train rolled backwards, derailing, exploding, and leveling the once bucolic town of Wapmagantic and killing 47 people, most of them young adults just starting their careers. Realizing that there was so much work to do in stopping the explosions, plus opposing the current shipments, we decided to meet every week. We wrote and sent out postcards weekly to the governor and elected officials, flyered at concerts, street fairs, and on the streets during lunch hour to educate the public about the dangers from the bond trains. We supported and attended press conferences, coordinated press protests in front of the DEC, Governor's Mansion, Capitol, and TD Bank, which funds fossil fuel industries. We attended court hearings, spoke at Public Service Commission hearings, and lobbied for our cause to be heard. And our efforts have paid off. Sheridan Hollow Alliance for Renewable Energy, SHARE, was initiated by PAWS members and quickly grew into a large, very effective coalition of faith groups, environmentalists, county legislators, state leaders, and civic groups. Due to their efforts, the plans to install turbines fueled by fracked gas brought in from Pennsylvania at the old Sheridan Avenue Answers plant has been dropped. The electricity for the plaza will come from solar farms, and other improvements are in the work. Thank you. I just hit something I wasn't supposed to, sorry. The electricity for the plaza will come from solar farms, and other improvements are in the works to reduce the negative impacts the Empire State Plaza's energy system will have on yet another environmental justice community. There is still more to be done to convert the entire project to renewable energy, but changing fracked gas power to solar power when the deal was practically signed off on when we started is a huge step forward. More and more communities in the Capital District are joining the effort to create community choice aggregation to help deliver more renewable energy to customers. This is a process where regional municipalities form a large buying consortium to get affordable solar energy to all residents in those municipalities as a default. This helps to reduce fossil fuel consumption and greenhouse gas emissions. PAWS has been an integral part of organizing the meetings in Bethlehem, Schenectady, Colony, and elsewhere who have committed to implementing CCAs. On September 20th, more than 1,000 people participated in the Global Climate March and Rally, the largest local climate event to date in this area. PAWS was the lead group in the community march, which attracted 500 participants. We are continuing the momentum with follow-up events, which will engage those who participated to stay involved and grow the movement started by Greta Thunberg. One of the demands we are making on the governor is to declare a New York State climate emergency, and the demands that support this are: 1, a Green New Deal that immediately halts all new fossil fuel projects and transitions our economy to 100% renewable energy by 2030. 2, respect of indigenous lands and sovereignty. 3, environmental justice for communities on the front lines of poverty and pollution, and sanctuary for all migrants. 4, protect and restore 50% of the world's lands and oceans and stop all deforestation by 2030. And 5, invest in sustainable agriculture and not agribusiness. Our most recent addition to our efforts is regarding waste reduction. On October 14th and 15th, we hosted Dr. Neil Seldman, Director of Waste to Wealth Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Washington, D.C., for a public presentation and workshop on recycling and waste management in the Capital Region. On the 14th, Neil presented how the Capital District can transition from landfills and incineration to zero waste. On the 15th, he did a workshop on creating a zero waste plan for Albany, Rensselaer, and Schenectady counties. More than 200 were in attendance for the two-day event. On November 6th, we will have a follow-up meeting to strategize a regional plan, and on November 25th, we are planning to have a conference call with one of the many expert consultants Dr. Seldman has provided to us for input, ideas, and how to implement our strategy. Zero Waste Capital District is another group which has started within PAWS. Hearing that the City of Albany was planning to build a $32 million transfer station to transfer our trash to another landfill hundreds of miles away when ours closes, we thought that money would be better spent on a sustainable plan to reduce waste, save the city money, and keep the landfill open indefinitely if managed appropriately. We have partnered with the City of Albany to host Zero Waste Jazz Fest for 2 years running. Our educational outreach efforts are growing, and we are getting more and more invitations to help with zero waste events around the region. We have found that most people are very happy to learn how to reduce their waste stream and feel really good about recycling and composting their waste instead of sending it to the landfill. We partnered with DGS to apply for and secure a $200,000 grant to help with waste reduction in the City of Albany, including education and a pilot backyard composting program. If you are interested in joining us in any of these efforts, we welcome you. We meet on the fourth Thursday of each month at 94 Central Avenue at the Citizen Action Office from 5:30 to 7. November's meeting will be on the 21st because Thanksgiving is on the fourth Thursday. Our website is pawsenergy.org, and please like us and follow us on Facebook. This year's UN Day theme is to recognize that the UN is dedicated to working with global leaders and civil society to develop solutions to combat the climate crisis and work towards a more sustainable future. PAWS is as dedicated as ever to work with other organizations to promote awareness, solutions, and support of ideas which will arrest the increasing greenhouse gases and protect the earth for future generations to live healthy, sustainable lives in harmony with nature. I'd like to leave you with the words of Pope Francis. In the end, everything has been entrusted to our protection, and all of us are responsible for it. Our goal is not to amass information or to satisfy curiosity, but rather to become painfully aware, to dare to turn what is happening in the world into our own personal suffering, and thus discover what each of us can do about it. Thank you.
And that was thanks to David Pablo for that wonderful discussion and interview. So I guess that's it, right, boss?
Mm-hmm.
This concludes our show. We certainly hope you enjoyed the episode of Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Andrea Cunliffe.
And I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr. Our engineer tonight is Alexis in the house. The one, the only, the incomparable Alexis Goldsmith. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose on demand through our Hudson Mohawk podcast and Facebook page. If you have any comments, suggestions, or a tender confession, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org, or be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for the Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
And as a reminder, Hudson Mohawk Radio Network is produced by local volunteers. Now, if you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org. Or just stop by on one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m., held right here at the beautiful Sanctuary for Independent Media. So, until next time, thanks for tuning in.